since the beginning of the United States. Kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, April 25th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Oh, it was a little bit of an active day. It's just markets are... They may as well shut down the markets after 2 o'clock because it just seems all the numbers happen in the morning. Of course, the West Coast comes on a little bit later in the morning, and then they just kind of stay there all day long, you know, unless there's some sort of a geopolitical situation that everybody begins to either sell in the markets. But we had gold. It was up today. Currently, we're looking at New York spot up 9.920 at 13.04. You have silver up 5 cents today at $19.80. Platinum was up $11 at $14.26, and palladium was up $8 at $813. The USDX today was trading lower most of the day, but that did turn around 0.01 for 79.77, still below that big level of 80. Crude oil today down 1.34 at 160. You know, when listening to mainstream media, they're talking about the sanctions going on in Russia and the turmoil that's the possible situation coming out of the Russia and Ukraine, and that's why oil is down. You'd think it would do just the opposite, but it didn't. It was down $1.34 at 100, but don't expect your gasoline prices to move on down too soon. And the markets today actually ended lower for the week. And, of course, they're saying it was dragged down by the Ukraine tensions. But certainly a lot of it was a major week for corporate earnings. And, of course, in addition to the escalation in Ukraine, you also had the foreign markets. They traded off significantly overnight, all down over 1%, most of them, the euro. Actually, they fared the best, 0.3%. Germany's DAX was down 1.5%. France was down just a little under 1%. And the big stock today, Amazon, they fell over 9% today. But let's go ahead and take a look at the markets today. The Dow's finishing out at 140 to the downside, 16,361. The NASDAQ was down 72 at 4,075. The S&P was down 15 at 1863, and the 10-year yield, 2.67, percent down 0.02. What a day.
What a week.
I'd like to have
what
more.
A month. What a year.
What a year.
What a decade.
I guess. Well, not quite, but yeah, you had the NASDAQ. They dropped over 1.5%. The Dow is down, as I mentioned, 140 points. They've given up all gains from earlier in the week, and now they're on track and then they did close the week with losses. But that Amazon, they actually came out with better than expected earnings and revenue yesterday, but they still plunged more than 9%. As they worried about rising costs at the tech giant.
Might rising be that costs. They're going to have to, maybe they have to get their drones built in the United
Perhaps.
States rather than in China.
Perhaps.
Maybe they'll start making drones that can fly all the way from China. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Make the products in China and send them in a drones, in a fleet of drones that just keep on crossing the Pacific and dumping the products directly at your front door.
Well, they did say that since they ran out of ways to increase their margin and to make a profit, this guy says you distract people. You distract people with the talk of drones and the talk of movies. They were making the movie agreement with cable. You have phones and all kinds of promises. So,
promises.
Yep.
That's the world we live in. I think the lessons we're seeing, one of the things I'm seeing is that it doesn't look like the stock market, or excuse me, the price of gold is going to fall below $1,285 for more, and who knows, a day or two. It could still happen again, the rest of that. But we've seen several instances where the price of gold is pretty much just, it's gone down a little below $1,285, but it's popped back up right away. We're establishing what looks like a bottom in the price of gold, not guaranteed, but it sure looks like it, $1,285. And at the same time, we're seeing something happening in the U.S. dollar index, where the index has been holding above 80. Might get up to 81 or even 82 once in a while, the rest of that. It's been, if 80 was the bottom line, it was like the foundation, and you couldn't hardly get below 80. Now 80 is becoming a little bit like the top. They've had 3 weeks anyway, maybe four, where the U.S. dollar index has stayed persistently, not continuously, but primarily below 80. And that's interesting to me. Again, we've had at least 6 months when 80 was the bottom and they wouldn't let it go below, and now can't seem to quite get it up over 80 and keep it there for any length of time. So lessons. Gold won't go below 1285, probably. And the dollar is not going to go above 80 on the U.S. dollar index, probably. At least not for long. We'll watch and see.
Today, Oregon became the first state to decide to drop online health exchange for their federal site. So they're dumping the first state in the nation that decided to dump their problem, their online health exchange, and to switch it to the federal website. Now, there has to be really bad in order for it to switch to the federal website. Oregon's board on Friday approved the advisory committee's recommendation to ditch its troubled portal. They're going to use healthcare.gov for private policies. They said fixing the existing system would be too costly at $78 million. Now, why would it cost $78 million to fix something that already you have basically have the bottom line of the program, $78 million to fix it? And they said it would take too long, so they're going to switch to the federal system, which is only going to cost $4 to $6 million.
Well, that's because you don't understand government, Melanie.
You don't
that's
understand Oregon.
No, it's not,
you don't
not just about Oregon. It's not just about Oregon.
We have many listeners. In fact, we broadcast out of Oregon. I love Oregon. It's a beautiful country.
Well, like I say, I've been up there, and I, yeah. Yeah.
Even Portland.
I thought it was most. I thought it was the nicest place I've ever been. But
it's beautiful, Idaho. Beautiful.
Yeah. The problem is, we're not talking about Oregon. We're talking about government. And how did it? How could it cost them $68 million to revive whatever they've already got? It is strange. It's like buying a. It's like buying a motor scooter. And then it costs $68 million to repair your motor scooter. That's because this motor scooter was built by the government, Melody. And the cost, the initial cost of the motor scooter is nothing compared to what it will ultimately cost to maintain the motor scooter. At least if the motor scooter is built by government.
We also had adjustable rate mortgages. They're on the rise. And if everybody remembers back to 2008, the adjustable rate mortgages were blamed on bringing down the house in 2008 because people couldn't afford the new mortgages at the new adjusted rate. And the rates were reset, and of course that made them unable, along with job losses, to afford their homes. So it was the beginning. You had all people that didn't qualify, all the subprime mortgages, and then the ARMs. And, of course, we're beginning to see the same thing again. Last month, ARMs made up 8.2% of all home loan applications, and that's up from 7.7% in February, and the same as in December. The last time the ARMs' share of mortgage applications has been at least this high was June of 2008.
Well, that doesn't mean anything, Melody.
No, it doesn't. No, they're interesting.
You know, you listen to these sorts of things, and two thoughts come to mind. One, what fools these mortals be.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And the other one is there's nothing new under the sun. There's only so many rackets that you can really run. You can call them different names, one thing or another. But people in positions of power, when they're looking to make more money, there's only so many, you know, there's only so many scams, and adjustable rate mortgages are one of them. And it's, you know, it's been 6 years since they nearly collapsed the economy. Surely we could use them again, and we would not have a problem this time.
Well, usually it is the adjustable rate mortgages in any real estate downturn is the main culprit because people do get into these homes. They get homes that they really shouldn't get into. They're bigger homes than what they can afford, and they're optimistic of their future because everybody hopes and thinks that, you know, 6 years down the road or 5 years down the road, they're going to be making more than what they are today, what they were when they went into the mortgage. So it's not the first time the adjustable rate mortgages had been a major thorn to the real estate industry, and I expect it won't be the last time. And again, we're seeing, and you're right, we're seeing the same history repeat itself as far as it is in referencing the adjustable rate mortgages.
Why do they have adjustable rate mortgages? And the reason is to get people who would not otherwise borrow, would not otherwise qualify to borrow, go ahead and buy a house. Now, how much intelligence does it take to look at this and say, you know, this probably isn't going to work out? Every time they dust off the adjustable rate mortgages and they bring them out and make them available to the public, it's the bank's way of saying that you people are not borrowing enough money and building enough houses. So we're going to trick you into some scam where you get low interest rates right now, and then in a couple of years, maybe they'll go up. Maybe is virtually a guarantee. And when they go up, guess what? You won't be able to make your payment. And when you can't make your payment, then the house is they will foreclose on the house. And then we're going to do this a very similar dance to what we've done already. But the real cause is they're not moving enough homes. So they have to come up with some sort of a scheme to attract, you know, it's not enough to offer people a new toaster. You got to do something else. And they say, oh, adjustable rate mortgages. That'll be great. And what's astonishing, again, you know, the third cliche that comes to mind is those who don't learn from history are destined to repeat it. Here we are, 8 years after the last time we got into this problem, and we're getting into it again.
We haven't talked about Europe for a while. Today, the Fitch Ratings Agency, they upgraded Spain's credit grade, citing an improvement in their outlook. And they lifted the sovereign rating by one notch. And Fitch said the economic reforms of the labor market, pension system, fiscal framework, and financial sector that have been enacted by the authorities since the start of the crisis have improved the longer-term outlook. And as we all know, Spain was among the hardest hit by the hardest country that was hit by the financial crisis. And they still have a very high unemployment rate. It's still near 26%. So here you have an economy that is out of recession. The government borrowing rates have dropped, but yet people are still unemployed. And it's like, we don't care if people work. We just fix our books by taking from those that do work, and, you know, higher taxes and cutting of their pension system and cutting of their social promises, their social commitments, social programs. So
the point is that if the average man or woman ran their own business with as much smoke and mirrors in their mm-hmm. accounting department as we routinely find in governments around the world, the average person tries that. Go ahead and run your business the way the government runs its books. Keep your books the way the government. Guess who's going bye-bye? Pack a toothbrush. You're going to be gone for a while for fraud. What we're seeing in Spain is the same thing we see in this country right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get straight accounting. They can't give us straight numbers. They try to create illusions with false reports. It's evidence that the only thing they have left right now is illusions. I mean, when the government really has to get down and just lie, and lie, it has to be evidence that the government's in big trouble. They don't have anything else that they can rely on, depend on, hopefully, change the circumstances.
Well, I don't think they want to become Greece. Greece's public order ministry says it has policed an average of 14 protests per day since the country's bailout 4 years ago. And they defend their frequent use of tear gas at the violent street rallies. You don't hear anything about that. They said it had policed over 20,000 public protests across the country between May 8th of 2010 and March 3rd of 2014, including over 6,200 in Greater Athens. And the country's 240 billion euro bailout by the Eurozone countries and the IMF, again, they also had the harsh cost-cutting measures. The ministry says Greece buys tear gas from the U.S., Israel, Britain, France, Switzerland, Germany, Brazil, and the Czech and others. How much tear gas do they need? What do they have?
I'm going to have to change their slogan about Greece to the crying people, because everybody's probably got tear gas in their eyes.
So it goes to show things are not rosy in the Eurozone.
True story. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. 229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
That air, sometimes when you inhale that air, it just doesn't...
Yeah, but it's even worse if you don't inhale it. Sometimes it's bad to inhale, but it's even worse if you don't inhale. That's
I was taking a deep breath to talk about Mint State 61, $20 gold pieces with gold being up today. Everything is up. Of course, your gold eagles, your bullion coin, your 1 ounce gold eagles are higher. And we've been trying to keep the price of Mint State 61, $20 gold pieces below $100, above the price of a gold eagle coin. It's getting close. It moved up $6 overnight at 98 over gold bullion coins. So, they've actually gone up in the same time over $35 here in the last couple of days, and they're doing very, very well. And so you can pick up your Mint State 61 $20 gold pieces for $1,470. 3 days ago, I was selling them for $1,440, $1,445. And so, folks, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And you'll still be getting a Silver Eagle with all your trades today and next week. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And if you'd like to send us a question by email today, you can do so, questions@dgscoins.com, questions@dgscoins.com. Thank you, Al.
Thanks me for what, Melody?
It's just go on. Just move on.
Just wondering what I was being thanked for. we talked about this a little bit yesterday, talking about President Obama in Japan. He's being unsuccessful at trying to negotiate, advance the Trans-Pacific Trade Treaty. And here's another article from the New York Times. Obama suffers setbacks in Japan and Middle East. Everyone knows there's no point to beating a dead horse. It's an old cliche. Don't beat a dead horse. No point to it. But it's not true when it comes to lame ducks. You see, you got to treat lame ducks differently from dead horses. And President Obama really is a lame duck. He's been practically a lame duck, 6 months after his last election his reelection. And what we see happening, here's the New York Times. President Obama encountered setbacks in two of his most cherished foreign policy projects on Thursday as he failed to achieve a trade deal that undergirds his strategic pivot to Asia, and the Middle East peace process suffered a potentially irreparable breakdown. Well, he goes, they expand on this to some degree, and they said the setbacks, though worlds apart in geography and history, speak to the common challenge Mr. Obama has had in translating his ideas and ambitions into enduring policies. He has watched outside forces unravel his best-laid plans, from resetting relations with Russia to managing the epical political change in the Arab world. Now, point is that President Obama, his administration, is certainly losing face and credibility in Russia, in Japan, in Jerusalem, in Israel. And he's hitting an international trifecta, all right? He's simultaneously failing in Japan, Jerusalem, or Russia, and domestically he's even failing, you could argue, he or his administration are failing in Nevada, where they've been run off by a cowboy. When was the last time anyone heard of an Obama success? Obamacare? I know it's not.
It was enough.
It was his signature legislation. But before it was done, Obama wanted to start calling it the Affordable Care Act, which is its true name, in order to distance himself and the Democrats from Obamacare. The program was such a debacle as it began, that no one really wanted to be associated with it. President Obama has become a kind of embarrassment. He's president at a difficult time in American history. I don't know that any man could sit in the White House under current circumstances and provide much success in foreign affairs. But I know that Obama comes across as an incompetent, almost a juvenile. In almost every instance where he tries to affect domestic legislation or foreign affairs, except for killing people with drones. Obama says he's pretty good at that, and he's right. Obama's already the lamest duck we've probably ever had in the White House, and he still has over two more years to go. What will Obama do with foreign problems over the next 2 years? What will he do with domestic problems? If Obama doesn't begin to show some evidence of success and competence to deal with problems, he'll soon be subject to open ridicule on a global scale. Now, you can sit back and say that's kind of funny, that's kind of odd, but it's not insignificant. The consequences of Obama's incompetence go far beyond his personal humiliation. For better or for worse, Obama's the symbol of America, and the only thing he's able to currently symbolize is weakness. In difficult times, can the economy recover under a president who is perceived to be weak? Will the fiat dollar hold or lose value under a president who is perceived by all to be weak? Obama's incompetence isn't merely an embarrassment. It's another one of those odd economic indicators that aren't officially recognized by economists, but which nevertheless help to slow and weaken the economy. Does anyone really believe that the Obama administration is capable of dealing with a serious problem? If not, I mean, what can Obama do right now? Is there anything he can do? Can he do anything in the Middle East? Can he do anything meaningful between Japan and China? Can he do anything significant in the Ukraine? Is there any place where Obama can draw a real line in the sand and no one dare cross it? And if there aren't any real lines in the sand, how can Americans have confidence? How can they have the confidence that's essential to forging an economic recovery in the next 2 years? Everyone talks about it. The government's constantly trying to maintain public confidence. Confidence is important to the economy. And how do they maintain confidence? By telling us fairy tales, by telling us lies about the employment rate or the unemployment rate and the inflation rate. And they constantly, we're going to have a recovery. Yeah, when? sooner or later, you get caught in your own lies. And Obama's become something like the little boy who cried wolf and wolf and wolf. Only, you know, we just got to a point where nobody's paying attention. And how does he regain credibility? And if he doesn't, how do we gain sufficient confidence to pull us out of this economic hole? And there's a lesson here. Right? It's a subjective lesson. It's the kind of thing that you can't quantify. But nevertheless, you got to elect somebody to the White House who has some gravitas. Not just someone who is a great cheerleader. You got to have somebody up there that has some gravitas. You got to have some authority where people, he talks and people listen. They don't snicker. Obama doesn't appear to be that guy to me. He may be an effective cheerleader, but that's not what this country needs. It needs somebody who's going to get tough, stay strong, whatever. And I don't think Obama can do it. And all of that is, it presents negative consequences, negative potentials for the economy. So what are we going to do, Melody?
Well, you know,
get rid of Obama and bring in Joe Biden? Do you think Obama or Biden could inspire the kind of confidence we need to shore up the economy?
I don't know why we'd bring in Biden, but, you know, when you have a politician who only experience is, 2 years in the Senate, they won't have the ability or the experience to handle foreign policy. It does take, I believe, someone, and you're right, skilled and experienced. And, you know, our economy, they talk about our recovery. Our recovery is only as good as our standard of living declining. If you look how bad our standard of living has declined, you could say our recovery fits the bill. But to turn things around, I think we're going to have to go a little bit, you know, we have to get the attention of somebody to understand the truth. And they can't tell the truth,
Melody. They've been lying for so long, they can't come clean. What is he going to do? He's claiming that the unemployment rate is 6-7%. Is he going to come forward and say, oops, we made a little mistake, and it's actually like 23%? He can't do that.
The most he could do is,
if he admitted that the unemployment rate was 8% right now, everybody would riot. He can't come close.
He's
been lying for so long, he's caught in a web of his own lies.
And it's just not him. It's been going on for a very long time. Heck, some of the recessions that they told us that we came out, we never really did. But they tell us that we have. They base their numbers to equal a recession. Sure, again, your numbers might show we're out of recession, but yet, you know, our jobs back, or people working, our incomes going up? Absolutely not. They've just disconnected and they dissected everything. So it's not him. It isn't anyone. And I do believe we will have a day of reckoning that is coming. And until that day of reckoning happens, this will continue. And if people don't get prepared, they will be the ones who are hurt the most.
I'll tell you something else that I am learning as I grow older. All right? I'm a senior citizen and so on.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. And I wouldn't have thought so when I was younger. I would have thought, you know, it's natural that we identify with our own age group. So it creates a bias. We always tend to think that our age group, if you're a kid, you think you're smarter than everybody else. And if you're a teenager, you're smarter than everybody else. And if you're 20s and 40s and 60s and whatever, you think you're smarter than anyone else, than everyone else, the other age groups. That's a natural part of life. But it really does seem to me that there's a point to electing politicians that have more years under their belt. We tend to elect younger people in this country, and we've done it for some time. And they seem vital and energetic and admirable. Right? But the truth is, they don't know what the hell's going on. Right? And it's not it's not just a question of whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, intelligent, ignorant, or, you know, unintelligent and fairly, you know, whatever. The point is, you actually do learn more as you go through life. And that wisdom, you know, it becomes valuable. And if we're going to insist on electing young people into Congress, for example, they don't know what's going on. And it's not just a knock on them. It's just a fact of reality. They can't. They don't have enough years under their belt to see what's happening. They're going to argue that, oh, they see the, you know, the old-timers, they're thinking in terms of old problems and whatever, that the old-timers, they don't see what's happening now. Well, you can make that argument. A lot of people will believe it. But I look, and I would have. I would have believed it myself when I was younger. But I look now, and I don't think it's just because I'm a senior citizen. You really do need mature individuals to keep you from doing dumb things. You know, Obama, how could he be dumb enough to say he's good at killing people with drones? You know, if you just lately stopped playing video games, that's the sort of comment you might make. And not realize the political ramifications of something that foolish. And if you're going to get caught up in willingness, people persuade you to tell lies, and you got to tell lies to hold the economy together. Well, that makes sense for a while, maybe. It seems to make sense, but it takes a certain amount of maturity to realize, no, I've been there, I've done that. I tried lies, and they always blew up in my face, and so I just said, I'm not doing it anymore. And I know that's, you can't expect that necessarily out of any politician, but you can expect it to a greater degree, in my opinion, from a mature politician. Not a guarantee, but Obama, you know, he's a kid. He doesn't belong there. He should be the maitre d' at the Washington, at the White House, wherever they serve, at the dining room, right? That's what Obama's equipped for. That's what he's capable of. And everybody, oh, he's the greatest maitre d' we've ever had here. Yeah. But he doesn't, man just doesn't belong in the White House. So, anyway, need to get some senior citizens in the White House, and not just because they're old, but because they've been around and they've dealt with problems, and they have a certain perspective that you can't have, you can't get it as a young man.
And, I mean, that's not to say that there aren't old people or elderly or senior, you know, I mean, then the other side of the coin, Al, is the politicians that have been there forever.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they went in when they were 20 and they're there when they're 90.
Well, theoretically, they've learned things over time, but most of them only have learned corruption. I'll give you the, you know, to tolerate it at least. There's not an easy answer on this, but I'm just saying that if we're going to focus on younger politicians, we're going to have problems. We're going to.
Well, the sad thing also is when you look at these young kids. I mean, you look at the guys who Zuckerberg and some of these youthful, the under 30 people, men, women that are billionaires, and the influence that they can have without even understanding the world.
Not even understanding themselves.
No.
You get into these circumstances and you become too successful at a very early age. You develop a kind of arrogance and a sense of that you're omnipotent and everything you do is right and you're destined to win every time. That's a dangerous man. That's a dangerous way of thinking. We have to take a break for some more commercials. I'm Alfred Addis. Here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries. have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom, Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Here's an article from
I got some questions. Now, I'm going to combine the two because it does involve Russia and Ukraine. And the headlines on the Drudge Report, of course, is Ukraine fears invasion is imminent. And I also know there's a lot of propaganda going around on the internet in relationship to Russia and what is happening in Ukraine. But the question is, a Russian intelligence gathering ship has been operating off the U.S. East Coast and near the Gulf of Mexico for the past month. The ship was evidently spying on the nuclear submarine base at Kings Bay, Georgia. Normally, this type of movement is routine, but with Ukraine heating up, is this more ominous? And the other question is also in relationship, according to World News, Putin has halted all talks with the White House. Obama and Putin last spoke over the phone on April 14th. Is this the beginning of breakdown of diplomatic relations, which normally precedes the war?
Well, first off, if the Russians are monitoring submarine facilities in Georgia, it's nothing new. I doubt that that's anything particularly new, but it's one of those things that's happening at a time when these kinds of events take on a different sort of significance. The events aren't necessarily new. It may be that they've been scheduled to do this, to monitor whatever's going on in Georgia. They may swing by every 90 days or 60 days or once a month or whatever it is. It may be standard operating procedure. Nobody pays any attention to it. But once you get the Ukraine going, then people sit back and say, oh, now, is this significant? And the answer is, in and of itself, probably not. But could it be significant? Yeah. If someone does something foolish, if someone does something stupid, if some sort of an accident takes place, an accident, things are now fragile. And as a result, if something stupid or accidental or intentional takes place, then we have something significant. People are going to start to scream and shout, and it'll only make things worse and increase. whatever liability, whatever peril we're in right now. I don't think we're in any real peril. We're in annoyance right now more so than anything else. But peril could happen. Real peril could jump up at any time if someone does something really stupid. And there's a bunch of contenders for that. Yet the United States is doing nothing. We've got the Russians who are, I don't know what the Russians are up to anymore, tell you the truth, but we have the Russians within eastern Ukraine. Not the nation Russia, the Russian people that live in the, they don't want to take a chance on being left behind. They are insisting that they have, that they be freed from the Ukraine now. And all they're doing is aggravating the situation and probably making it more difficult for everyone. My guess would be that Putin would have been content to take the Crimea, sit down, shut up, be done with it, and then come back and maybe get the eastern Ukraine 2 years from now. That'd be my guess on how Putin might be thinking. But he's kind of painted into a corner. If the Ukrainians come down and start shooting the Russians that are in the Ukraine, then Russia has to invade. How do you get the people in eastern Ukraine, the Russians in the eastern part of Ukraine, how do you get them to shut up, sit down, be quiet? Grief. How are you going to do it, Melody?
Well, you know, you almost have to ask yourself what, as far as personalities, and we saw Russia put Obama in his place twice, kept him from doing things that, you know, he was all wound up to do. Now you have Obama placing sanctions, and I believe new sanctions will be are looming against Russia, more financial sanctions. You've seen Russia's stock market drop considerably. So financially, who's really stirring the nest?
Yeah, I understand.
Who is, and, you know, as I said, there's a lot of propaganda going around as far as, you know, reports on this happening from New York Times and from various news places from what I read. Don't know if they're true, but from what I read. So it's, what is the truth of the matter?
It doesn't. The problem is that it's gone so far right now that the truth is irrelevant. It's one of these things. It's like dealing with a couple of teenagers, and you're saying, and they start poking each other. And you say, now, kids, stop that. And each one of them says, well, he did it first. And they feel they can't grasp the idea that it's going to be a good idea to shut up. Leave it alone. Stop. They got to have the last word. And so, no matter if somebody stirs the hornet's nest from the European side or from the American side, the Russians are going to say, "Wow, you just stirred the hornet's nest. Now we're going to stir the hornet's nest." And then they go back and forth until finally, the hornets bust loose, and we have a serious problem. It's just crazy. Where is the advantage of this? Who is benefiting out of this right now? That would be one. That's one of the questions we could ask about the Ukraine. Who is benefiting from the confrontation that's happening there? Russia has Crimea. That's been done. All right. Who benefits from whatever controversy remains in the East Ukraine? I don't think Russia's going to benefit, at least not in an immediate sense. I don't think the Europeans can benefit. Ukraine can't benefit. The people in East Ukraine, the Russians, they may think they're going to benefit. They're trying to strike while the iron is hot. And I think what they're going to wind up is tanks rolling down the streets and blowing up their buildings. And a bunch of them are going to get killed. I don't think this is one of these crazy things where if you knew for a fact who's benefiting from this, then you could at least say, okay, this is rational. It might be wrong, but it's rational. But when you get into circumstances where maybe no one is benefiting, they're just caught in a trap where they're trying to save face.
Also, speaking with David Hobson, he's on the program periodically, and we talk about gold and silver, but he does have a pretty strong military background, and we were conversing one day in reference to all the military commanders that supposedly was fired and so forth, and he says that really isn't the problem. He followed some of them, and you know, he thought that was the whole situation was a little exaggerated. He says, but the problem is the communication between the military and Obama. He says it doesn't exist. And he says the fear is when something happens, the lack of communication is far more dangerous. And you see the problem now that we have with Russia and that lack of communication between the military and Obama. That's one of the things that could be in the background that, no one's talking about. And what support does Obama have with all these sanctions and everything that he's placing? Is he doing it on his own? What is he being backed with?
Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about, where he just isn't competent to hold that office.
Well, it's not a matter of whether he's competent or not. I mean, he's there and he's got the ability to do certain things.
Maybe he doesn't. I mean, officially he has that ability. But what I'm saying is I don't think he does on a personal level. For whatever reason, it's just the nature of his personality. It's the nature of his background. I don't think he has the ability to hold this thing together. I don't think he gets it. Right? I don't know if he can get it, but I don't believe he has gotten it. And your friend, Mr. Hobson, I think he's...
Krieger. You know, David Krieger.
Okay, Krieger. In any case, the report that Obama's not talking to the military. Well, it doesn't surprise me. I think that's true. I think Obama's in the White House all by himself. He's got to have a sense of isolation that's almost profound. Who is really working with Obama? Anyone? Who is Obama working with? Anyone? Does he have any allies? I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. I wouldn't want to be in that man's shoes. Say, oh, you could be president. No, I'm not. And that's part of get old enough where you actually think you realize, not me. Life is too short. You're not going to saddle me with that job. You know, I obviously don't have the opportunity, but you get to a point where you have a certain amount of sense. Obama doesn't have it. People understand it. He is even understanding it. And now he can't talk to the military. What do we do if we have a real problem? Is Obama able to deal with a real problem? I don't think he can. I think he could be a good guy to be, the front man, the spokesman for the White House. I think Jay Carney is the guy who's currently sitting there, if I remember correctly. And he speaks on these issues. Hey, Obama could do a good job of that, probably. But he's not the guy to be making the calls.
Well, we got 1,000 more days to find out.
Yeah, we've got over
until
2 years.
He leaves office. 1,000 days, 8 hours, and 5 minutes. So there you go.
Oh, really?
There's a countdown clock.
Now we know where everybody is on the internet. They're all watching that clock. 10, 9, 8. I got an article here from Ms. Shedlock. It talks about bidding wars for junk, and here's just one paragraph out of his article. He said, with central bankers globally suppressing interest rates, the creditors' search for yield elsewhere is on. One of the places investors have turned is speculative junk bond offerings. What he's saying is that because interest rates are so low, investors can't make it on bonds. Right? They can't really get a good return on bonds. The return on stock is at least questionable. And the investors are therefore, they're looking for they're going into speculative junk bonds in order to maybe get a decent return on the dollar. And here's where I differ from these kinds of investors. They believe that it's possible to reliably invest their wealth, their fiat dollars, into some form of paper debt instruments, stocks, bonds, junk bonds, and recover an acceptable yield on their wealth. They make 3%, 5% per year, whatever. If the world's central bankers, our central banks, have reduced the interest rates on what would ordinarily provide a positive yield on bonds, for example, the investors will seek out junk bonds because they pay a higher rate of interest, an interest rate that is at least enough to exceed the inflation rate. From the investor's perspective, they need only search through various paper investment options until they find one that pays a positive rate of return. If the option that pays the highest reasonable rate of return is junk bonds, then they'll invest in junk bonds. If it's stocks, they'll invest in stocks. If it's gold, it'll be gold. It'll be whatever that pays the highest rate of return. Now, the fundamental premise behind their investment strategy is that paper monetary and paper debt instrument system that system will survive no matter what. Yeah, they realize that they could lose some or all of their wealth if they invest, that is to say, bet on a particular junk bond that turns out to be worthless. But they don't imagine or believe that the entire paper monetary system, including U.S. dollars, stocks, bonds, bank accounts, pension plans, and junk bonds, could suffer a systemic collapse for all the paper financial instruments suffer sudden, substantial, or even complete losses of value. I'm sitting here, on the other hand, and my perspective, I'm not looking to make a fast buck. I am not looking for an increased yield. Right? That's not my objective. My slant on this is that we are in a certain amount of jeopardy, and my interest, my fundamental objective in investing is to preserve whatever wealth I have. The people going into junk bonds want more. I just want to keep what I've got. And these two perspectives help to explain how you should invest. If you think the paper system is safe, then go on into junk bonds or whatever else. On the other hand, if you think we're in peril, you need to preserve your wealth. And if you're going to preserve your wealth, preserve it. Don't worry about making more. Just hang on to what you got. If that motivates you, you need gold. You need silver. In the end, they will preserve wealth the paper won't. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. Be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.